Hi, everybody, and welcome to the Driving Mobility Podcast, where we celebrate the people, ideas, and innovations shaping the future of automotive. I'm your host, Michelle Pierog, and today I get the joy of speaking with not just an incredible industry leader, but my dear friend, Jamie Carpenter. Jamie's had an amazing year this year, being recognized as Woman in Remarketing and receiving the Impact Award from the Automotive Remarketing Alliance for her leadership and contributions to the industry. She's one of those people who doesn't just talk about change, she builds it. From her work advancing artificial intelligence and remarketing to her advocacy for data privacy through Privacy for Cars, Jamie continues to push the industry forward in ways that truly matter. We're going to dive into her journey, her passion for innovation, and how technology, collaboration, and partnerships are shaping the next chapter of vehicle lifecycle management. But first, Jamie, let's tell the story about our friendship and how we met and how long ago that was. Do you want to share that?
Sure, I can do that. And thanks for that awesome intro. I hope I live up to that, but I thank you. So this is actually one of my favorite stories to share. We met on a connecting flight to an IARA conference, and we were headed to Colorado. And I live in Alabama. Michelle is in Boston, or right outside. But I had to get up really early that morning, so I had coffee on the way to the airport. I think I had a Diet Coke on the plane. We just hit it off immediately on the airplane. We sat together, we chatted the entire flight. We landed, I had another like Diet Coke. We didn't have time to eat. We like hit the ground running. We were gonna go to dinner together that night, and this was after a reception. And at dinner, Michelle sitting across from me as the table full of men were the only two females. And all of a sudden I was like, I'm gonna be sick. And so I'm trying to get out of the booth and I can't get out. And the next thing I know, I am waking up in the emergency room. I have had a seizure at dinner, passed out cold from dehydration. So lessons learned, you should drink a lot of water and eat when you're flying to high altitudes. But while I was at the hospital, because of everything going on, they wanted to keep me and they said, well, we can let you go, but you can't stay by yourself. So this amazing person, Michelle Pierog, that I had met on an airplane, stayed with me that night so that I could actually leave the hospital. She did a lot of other amazing things, like getting in touch with my husband and my folks back home that I work with. But I knew the moment I met her what an amazing person she was, but the fact that she was like, I'll stay with her, she can go home. I was like, this is a person that's gonna be in my life forever. And 25 years later, here we are. And I will say that she is my best friend. So thank you for taking care of me that night. And,
of course. The best story ever. I love telling that story too. And one of the things that I always tell is somehow it was kismet. We sat next to each other on the plane. And my boss at the time, Dave Blake, sat on the other side of me. And we literally ignored him for 3 solid hours. He was so miffed. Because he knew you before that, and I didn't. And he was so miffed that we didn't talk to him at all. But yeah. Hey, it happened the way it was supposed to happen. It was definitely destiny to become great friends, and I've enjoyed so much kind of watching you grow in the industry and having you there to support me as I'm trying to try new things. So it's been amazing, and I'm so excited to be able to have this conversation with you. Yeah. So let's start a little bit like with your journey. I mean, I know your story and I'd love you to share it. First of all, you won both the Women in Remarketing Award and the ARA Impact Award for specifically spotlighting your work that you've done on the AI committee at ARA. When you look back over this year, what do you think has driven your success and passion for advancing the industry? You know, understanding that this story could go back beyond this year, but this year specifically, you seem to have really blossomed.
I think I can contribute some of that to you. You saw something in me as the industry advancement leader of ARA and asked me to chair or co-chair the AI committee. And I had done a little work with AI for my short time working with UVI, but really my knowledge was more of interest and not of education. And so through that passion, we were able to build this really great team of really smart people in our industry that work in artificial intelligence. I started taking some Google AI Essential classes, and through that knowledge base between the two of us, we had an opportunity to really start leading the industry on what AI does, what it is, and how it is changing our industry. That work has been impactful in ways where we have shared different technologies from condition report writing to just how to use chatbots and how it is helping with arbitration issues. And that work has led to us being asked to be a keynote at the last conference. And I feel really humbled to be seen as one of the leaders in AI for our industry, knowing that that is due in part to the incredible team that we have put together.
Yeah, so, it really is an incredible team. And that's been your, I know that that's your superpower. So when I was asked to find somebody to lead that committee, even though you just had a short time at UVI and I knew you were interested in and you were learning a lot about AI, but what I really knew is that you know people and you would be able to build that committee to be a strong one. And boy, did that come true, because you built it into the most talked about committee, I think, of ARA right now. I mean, I understand AI is a hot topic right now for sure. So that also played part in kind of the destiny of what happened. But you've done an amazing job, and I never doubted that. And man, you've just really made me proud.
Oh, well, thank you. I've learned so much. I think it's been a lot of being in the right place at the right time. I know that throughout my career, there have been a lot of things that I've wanted to do, and I haven't really been allowed the platform maybe to do it. Being in this spot, in this place, given the opportunities that I've been given, it just really sort of let the dominoes fall in the right way. I would say that's a big part of my journey.
I want to ask you where the interest came for AI.
My interest really started at AutoCheck. We have a lot of different businesses, our overall arching company being AutoTech. The ChatGPT folks came and spoke at AutoTech because they wanted us to use their chatbots for customer service. We were very old school, and so we believed that a person should answer the phone, a person should respond to emails. So during my time there, we weren't really interested in using it, but knew that we needed to be knowledgeable, because obviously this is something that's coming. As we all know, when you log on to any website and you say, I would like to chat to someone, you're not chatting to a person, but a bot. That really sparked the curiosity, and I met the UVI folks at an NADA show, and it was the booth that everybody was talking about. I was really interested in going and seeing what they were doing. The part of AI that is really defining the way condition reports are being written today amazed me. And I thought, what is this going to look like in the next 5 to 10 years? This is really going to revolutionize our industry. And so I think the combination of those two things really is what kind of gave me that spark of, I want to know everything there is to know about AI.
Yeah, it's so interesting to me because AI seems to be kind of a not personal thing. As a matter of fact, a lot of people say that it's taking away connectivity between people. So I know you have often said that AI shouldn't replace people, but should empower them. Can you think of a specific example of where you've seen AI or data tools that make, you know, a measurable difference in decision making and process efficiency, but also don't lose the human touch?
So a lot of times when we would meet with auctions, their first question was, can I reduce my workforce? And it was always, no, you can't reduce them. You may not have to add more, but taking away is probably not feasible, not at this point anyway, because when a vehicle is scanned, a person still needs to review the information. They still have to train AI. Whatever the condition report produces, you still need that human element to go out, yes, it's correct, no, it's not. We just know that it does create efficiency because that first scan now can be done in, you know, 90 seconds or less than 2 minutes, where before you would have to have the human go around it. It would have to get reconditioned and then come back. And what was taking just a few minutes in the AI world was taking at least 30 minutes in the human only world. And so to be able to cut that, make it more efficient and make it more accurate, you know, you can also then start to streamline it across our industry. So you don't have one auction that is grading a car and then wanting to change it just to get the grade they want, but now it kind of creates more efficiency and more transparency. I think that even when you're talking customer service and you may have the chatbot that is sort of weeding out things that are in the FAQs that you're kind of hoping you're not going to get a call for anyway, because right, that's taking time away from a customer service rep that needs to be spending time on research and figuring out what problems they don't know just based off of like the checklist. So I think, again, it is just making things more efficient. And we all know the biggest frustration is when you want to talk to a human and you're, you know, pressing zero or just give me a human, or the same way on, you know, your, for me and probably you more technologically advanced, we're like, I've already gone through all of this. If that could, you know, if I could solve it on my own, I would. Give me a person, give me a person. I think that the human element also is what our industry is all about. And it just is not something that we want to go away. And so I think protecting that is important for us to have the success that we've always had. I think that's why 100% internet sales didn't come to fruition like we thought it would 20 years ago, is because we still have folks that want to go to an auction and touch and feel and smell and be part of the creativity and the energy and everything that comes with the performance, let's just say, of hosting an auction. So there is that element that you can't get an AI created environment that you can get when you have all of the folks coming together right, to create it.
Listen to a doctor that calls AI artificial intimacy, and that's super interesting to me because you're right, we don't want AI to take over the connectivity, and we definitely see, especially with people in the auto industry, they want to go to a place where they feel an energy and they have a connectedness to each other. So I love that you've been able to kind of keep that as a main determining factor as you're pulling people into the committees and building out, you know, the subject matter experts for AI as they work with the remarketing industry. So Park My Fleet manages thousands of vehicles across the full life cycle, you know, from in-fleeting to remarketing, vehicles that are changing hands that need to be serviced, and from what you're saying about AI, it's mostly about efficiency and checks and balances and taking the mundane tasks away so that people can have more time to spend on things that, you know, take more problem solving and take a little nuance and take maybe understanding other people. With that, how do you see kind of AI evolving? And you can even talk about privacy for cars here as we take vehicles that come onto our locations and we get them ready for their next user. How is AI enhancing that process, and how is privacy for cars helping to make sure we're taking care of the person that's involved in the life cycle of that previous vehicle?
We're moving into a world where mobility and owning vehicles is not really what it used to be. So, you know, there's this thought that people will rent vehicles, or maybe they will lease vehicles, but they won't own just one. They'll be part of a group that if I want to go to the beach and I want to drive a soft top car and have, you know, the wind blowing in my hair one day, but then my family's going to go on a road trip, so I might need a van. You just get the car that you want at the time that you want it, or you don't want to drive at all, and so you are, you know, using Uber or Lyft, or we have the autonomous vehicle that, you know, is just driving us wherever we want. But all of those vehicles have to be serviced and they have to be stored somewhere. And so I think of what you guys are doing as really the way to facilitate, okay, I am done for the night. My car's now going to go to this place, whether, you know, it could be rental, it could be the Amazon trucks that are dropping packages off, or UPS or whomever, but they're going to be stored there and they're going to get remarketed, let's say, overnight. They're going to get a condition report written. They're going to get the privacy deleted from whoever's plugged their phone in that day. They're going to get, you know, make sure that everything is safe. So like a safety check, making sure that the backup camera is working and the rear view mirrors aren't broken and, you know, the brakes are in good shape, oil doesn't need to be changed, or that the battery is charged. And in order to have this world that we know people, maybe not here in the South where we don't really have like a downtown, big, busy, everybody walks world, but for those trucks that we still have on the road because they are farming or they're transporting, you know, broken down vehicles or whatever's going on, they still have to store all of those somewhere. And I can just see how what you guys are doing can really revolutionize the way vehicles are thought about, because you have the group that are all EV, we love it, we love it, and then you have the group, we hate it. You have people who are like, ooh, I want to drive, I want to get in the autonomous vehicle at the airport and let it take me to my hotel, and then those are like, I'm not getting in something I don't have control over. But I think it just opens up this world of now you can kind of have whatever flavor you want. And I think we as humans love to have options, and if we had the option to have any of those things and then a place where they could be parked and taken care of and then we get them back, it just makes sense that eventually people will be more interested in trying new things.
100% shared mobility. You just kind of laid out Park My Fleet futuristic state, so that was awesome. I love that. Yeah, thanks. That idea. I used to talk about my niece who lives in North Carolina in one of those, you know, mega neighborhoods that has their own school because there's so many houses in there. Yeah. And every house has 2 and 3 garages. And you're like, I envision someday that those are going to become more like ports for deliveries, or some type of recreational thing because they'll have a parking lot like outside of their actual development that has all those types of cars that they can just order that will come to them and take them where they want to go. Just like you were saying, it's a soccer game today. Soccer mom needs a van. It's date night. I want a nice car. So I envision that, and ideally, I think, how cool would that be? We're from the US though, so you definitely have the diehards who I'm going to own my car. And for some people, it's an extension of their personality or an extension of their home. I mean, people store things in their car that they leave there all the time. So I understand, but having options is definitely, I think, an advantage. We were actually just talking about this earlier on our marketing call about adoption and, who's open to having a vehicle that either they don't own or drives it themselves. And I was telling the story, and my granddaughter, Greta, who I pick up from school sometimes, and she's so open to the car driving itself that the other day I was driving her home from school and she said, "Mimi, are you driving the car or is it driving itself?" And I said, "Well, I'm driving the car." And she said, "Well, can you make the car drive itself?" And I said, "Yeah, I can if you want." She said, "Then can you come sit in the back seat with me and hold my hand?" I'm like, "No, I cannot do that." But it occurred to me that it was so funny that she's just so accepting of the fact that, hey, whatever, the car drives itself. We don't have to be driving it all the time. And it's interesting to see the different generations and who is accepting of that and who is not.
You hit that too. It's going to be a generational thing. Like my dad is like anti-Tesla. Like he just, when I pull up in their yard, he's like, "Why didn't it turn off?" And I'm like, "Well, it's keeping the car cool. Like it will turn off." But that was what, 5 years ago when I got it, I guess. And now he's like, "I'm gonna put a charger here." Like I hate that you have to go somewhere to charge, So like he's starting, like it's starting to change for him as well. But my girls are 24 and 23, and Audrey, my oldest, is like, "Let me drive the Tesla. I love to let it, do self-driving." And then my youngest is like, "I can't. I don't want to drive it. It just freaks me out. I just can't figure out like this. I don't like how it's so slow to brake, or then you're like slamming on." She just, because she's not comfortable, but she also doesn't like to drive. Like she would be one that would get an Uber everywhere if she could. Like she doesn't like to drive.
Hey, and that's an option. Those cars still need to go somewhere and be taken care of too, though. We see that with autonomous, and eventually, that's where it will go. Why are you going to have a garage when your car is autonomous and it's going to go put itself where it needs to be for the night, right?
I mean, I have a 3-car garage here, and we don't use the third one.
Right. So, we're bringing together fleet operations and charging and infrastructure and all the stuff you talked about with like these smart mobility services. Can you share with me how you see privacy for cars being part of that? Because that's the other question. Okay, all these cars are connected. What does that mean? How, and there's not that much awareness out there with what that does mean and what needs to be done when that car does change hands or change uses.
I did mention, originally, especially for rental cars, right? But we sometimes think that that's the only place that it matters. I think you and I both have a similar story when we bought our vehicles where the previous owner's information was in there. I think we both accidentally charged the credit card of the previous owner. You were lucky enough to know the previous owner. I didn't. So I had to call Tesla freaking out because poor Dave, I knew where he lived. I could have gone and told him myself, that's for sure. But
Because of the car, right? That's scary.
Everything. I mean, I could see text messages. I could see where he worked. It would be mom's house. I saw that. And then when you got in the car, it wanted to take me everywhere he went daily. And it didn't even matter that you didn't have to have home in there. It knows your route. Like it knows to make it more efficient for you. It tracks all of that. And so, just thinking used car, rental car, yes, that's important. But we've also seen where it's just as important in an Uber or a Lyft.
Or a car that's off lease that's going to go to a new owner.
I tell people what we do, and they're like, "Oh my gosh, I never thought about that." And then they go, "When I bought my car, the previous owner's information was in there. does that mean that mine was in there when it went to the previous owner? And I'm like, if you didn't delete it, it does. Or if you didn't ask them to delete it. And I was like, and even if you do it, you still don't know all the information the vehicle has captured that may be sending to an insurance company or maybe sending to this third party that they are tracking everything that we do, how we brake, how fast we drive. So especially in the mobility world and what you guys are doing, I mean, how amazing would it be if that was just part of that, let's just say, reconditioning that nightly.
Right. You clean the car, you wipe out the information. Yeah. It should
so you're
be just
cleaning
part
the data
of it.
And right. You're cleaning the car, right? You know, we often use this the analogy that you get a cell phone, right? So I have my cell phone, I'm going to get a new phone, and I don't trade that phone in without making sure I have deleted everything off of it. Because the last thing I want is for that phone to get into the hands of somebody else and then they know my life. Well, your car is your phone on wheels. It still has everything about your life on it. We have examples of people's social security numbers being stored, banking information, high level security information from military to banks. So,
right.
Yeah.
And that's part of what we do with Park My Fleet when we manage the vehicle to go to a next user. So that's awesome. Let me bring it back to you because we're running out of time here. You know, I could talk to you forever. The last question. So talking on mentorship and legacy and maybe what's next. So you've been a mentor and a role model for so many people, especially women in the remarketing and tech. What advice would you give to someone who wants to make a difference in this industry but doesn't really know where to start?
I have been asked this question often and it has changed over the years. It used to be the mom that was, you know, struggling with two kids 14 months apart and a husband that was a football coach trying to just survive and build a career to now someone who, you know, is in their 50s and has an empty nest.
Barely.
Yeah, the empty nest and the time. You realize just how precious it was when you were younger. And you thought the harder I work, the more I do, the more irreplaceable I will be. And so what I tell folks now is everybody's replaceable. That doesn't mean that you're not important and the work you're doing is not important, but you need to set the expectation early and make sure that you're being compensated for the work that you're doing. Because I think when we're younger, we think, well, I'm going to take on all this extra responsibility, which means I'm going to move up because I'm going to be recognized. And a lot of times that just ends up you being taken advantage of. I don't feel like I missed out on any big event with my family, but I definitely put work before my family in a lot of instances. My girls, when they were about to graduate high school, getting ready for college, it hit me when we were talking about what they wanted to do with their lives, and they both said, "We don't want to be you." And I was like,
"Ouch.
Why do you not want to be me? I've sacrificed for our family so that you could have the life that you have." And they're like, "Exactly." And they're
wow.
like, "We don't want to work that hard." And they were like, "You never seemed happy. You always seemed like you were trying to achieve the next thing. And you were just so work, work, work. And it felt like you were complaining about it more than you were relishing it."
Yeah, I think that came from our generation where we yeah. were valued for productivity only. And we knew that and even as young girls. And so that became how we worked. We worked, yeah. It was all about productivity, but we forgot to value ourselves and to turn around yeah. and say, "Hey, I'm valuable, this is why, and compensate me." You know,
right.
It was a hard question to ask. You just thought it would come to you if you worked very hard. So I
yeah.
love that you recognize that and that your girls recognize it.
And, you know, I thought, yeah, like, I don't, yeah, why am I doing that? Like, I work so that we can travel and do and have fun. And I had not taken a vacation ever in my career until 2019. I also didn't take a maternity leave. So I went back to work 10 days after my first was born and 5 days after my second, because in the state of Alabama, we don't get paid maternity. So a company can offer it, but it's not a standard. And at the time, you could get FMLA, but you know, you had to take your sick time first. And so I saved all of my sick time for my first, which was 10 days. And then when they're only 14 months apart, so I was so scared that they would get sick or something would happen, and I wanted to be able to take some time at Christmas, then I went back 5 days after my second was born.
And you put the, you brought the baby with you and put the baby like under your desk.
Yes, so I took like the pumpkin seat, and I had an office that I could close the door. So I put her under the desk, and I mean, all she was doing was sleeping really, right? So I would like sleep, and then like I would nurse, close my door, nurse her, put her back. Like, what? They're right. Like, this is why we do what we do. And so that would be my advice for sure. The other advice would be ask for a mentor, ask for help. Find you a Michelle. You can't do this alone. You've got to have that person that not only can you share your personal life with, but that understands your work life. I love my husband and we talk about everything, but he doesn't understand what's really going on in our industry and how that impacts what I'm going through or what my goals are and how I want to achieve those. But to have that person that you can bounce ideas off of, and you can have this camaraderie, and you can go back to the room, and you can really just kind of talk about your day and share your dreams and how you want to change the industry, and you can have that person that can help you map that out, is so important.
Yeah, absolutely. And remember that when you're the mentor, sometimes you get mentored by your mentee, as what you saw happen with your daughters, and so many things we learn from different generations of people. Jamie, thank you so much for sharing your story and for everything you continue to do for our industry. You show that leadership isn't just about driving results. It's about lifting others, building trust, and being brave enough to try new things.